Over 7 million different animals inhabit our planet.
And, I mean, throughout history, polar bears have been one of the most iconic animals on the planet.
Right.
And even worldwide, people that would never see one.
What can they teach us?
Their smaller ears and tail follow the physiological rule called the Allen's rule.
That's cool.
And what that does is just predicts animals that live farther north have smaller appendages in order to conserve.
Many species are in crisis and need your help.
So as these bears come to land earlier, they're coming to land when a lot of these birds are nesting. So they're preying on the birds. They're killing the birds in the nests. They're eating the eggs or the baby birds.
Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.
Welcome to the All Creatures Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angie.
Burr, Angie, that time of year.
I know, it's cold out here in Florida. I have two sweatshirts on.
I know, and it's in the 50s, and we're a bunch of wusses, right?
We are. My northern friends would not be pleased with me complaining about 50-degree weather.
But it was like 5 days ago. It was like high 80s or mid-80s in Florida, so.
But it is. It's a perfect time of year to talk about our species of the week, which is a polar bear.
Polar bears, yes. A lot of people love polar bears, and I guarantee a lot of people know a lot about polar bears. I can guarantee you to our listeners, you want to stay tuned because you will learn many, many new things about polar bears that you did not know before. I promise you that you will learn some new facts that you'll be like, wow, that's awesome.
Yes. I mean, just researching these guys this week, I had a lot of fun of just shouting out facts to my husband. Did you know that their hair is actually not white?
Yeah, I don't believe you, but we'll hear the facts when you get there. We'll hear that, or like how they survive in the Arctic.
Oh, their adaptations are incredible.
Yeah.
And in fact, they would probably not mind this 50-degree weather at all. They might even be a little bit warm.
Right, right. And I think, yeah, they would be feeling great out.
Like, they love the cold.
Yeah, they do. They thrive in
it. They sleep in it. They need it. It's what they adapted for. And really, some really cool physiology going on with these guys.
Very, very true. And when we get to nutrition, I can't wait because there's some things I was just like, wow. I like really did not know a lot of this stuff. So it's definitely a big thing. And I know a lot of people, especially in the news in the last few years, climate change has been a big thing on polar bears. We'll touch upon some of that. Like, what's the science behind it? But that's not the focus of the podcast. The podcast is really this animal and this physiology, because it is awesome.
Right. And I mean, throughout history, polar bears have been one of the most iconic animals on the planet.
Right.
And even worldwide, people that would never see one because they live in the South or whatnot, they're still drawn to these charismatic ice hunters.
Yeah, they are beautiful. They're
so
beautiful.
That's one of the reasons why we chose them today, just because they are not everybody's favorite, but they're definitely up there.
Yeah. They're up there, and there's a lot of cool stuff about them. So, you know, people don't want to hear things that they already know about. They want to learn. So that's what we're doing. Plus, what's really cool about this is I'm excited to
announce.
Very
exciting. I'm gonna do a little hand clap.
Yes. Yay! This Thursday, we have our first interview with a scientist that we'll be releasing, and that's with Dr. Erin Curry. She's a reproductive scientist that works specifically with polar bears. She's based out of the Cincinnati Zoo. She's a longtime friend. I've known her since she was in grad school. It's just crazy how both our lives have gone, and, you know, she's the perfect interview.
And she has a dream job.
She does. Oh, my God, yeah. Like I was just telling you before we started recording that on Facebook she has pictures of her driving around Manitoba in an ice truck, you know, looking for polar bears. Oh, my God, how fun.
Yeah, Dr. Curry, if you're hiring, send me an email.
I know. I am pushing you and Danielle. So I'm like, hey, I got two great grad students. But actually, your job's going to be podcasting, so I'm sorry. You keep saying you're looking for a job. I've got you a job. We just need to make...
No, on the side. I need to be in the lab somewhere, somehow.
All right, and then before we get rolling, I'd like to give a shout-out or thank you to our Patreon supporters. You know, a few people have already decided that we're worthwhile to support, so thank you.
And some awesome feedback we've had.
Yes, we've had some great feedback from some listeners. And then just a couple reviews that were posted that really made my day on iTunes. And you can go to iTunes and please leave us reviews on there. But Stephanie07 said, amazing and inspiring podcast about all things wildlife. That made me smile. That made my day. That makes this work worth it. And then Alana Turner said, love these guys. They're an exceptionally reliable, reputable, and fun source of information. So
good. Hopefully not. And we're not making our listeners fall asleep. That's key. Especially if you're driving, right?
Yeah, I know. When I get to mitochondrial DNA. Blah. All right. Polar bears. No mitochondrial DNA. Maybe a little bit. Not much. polar bears. So this was really cool. So known by many names around Earth, in Russian, they're called medved, which is the white bear. The Inuits call them Nanuk. Now, I've heard that before. I think from some movies and stuff, the polar bears, they kind of named them that. And then Germans call them Eisbars, which is ice bear.
Right.
Which is an awesome name. That's an awesome name
for
these guys.
That should be their name, I think.
Yeah. Ice bears, because they love the ice. They actually do really love the ice. Some cool facts about polar bears. First of all, they're the largest land carnivore. So by far, the closest one is the Kodiak brown bear, Alaskan brown bear. And basically, the brown bears get that big because of their diets. And they eat a lot of migrating salmon, huge protein, nutrition. So that's what allows them to grow as big as they are. Polar bears are just a little bit bigger, not much, you know, but a little bit bigger than the Kodiak bear.
An interesting fact is that they can actually breed with the grizzly.
Yeah. And
but it's very rare.
Yeah, it is. It is rare. And
their offspring are going to be hybrids that cannot reproduce.
Right. And I'll get there because I got the chromosomes.
I should have known. Of course.
Yeah. God, I'm the nerd.
I definitely don't know anything about the chromosomes.
Yeah, no, so I got a little bit. They'll show you a little bit difference. But yeah, I didn't know the hybrids actually were infertile, which is interesting because their chromosomes are the same. Polar bears are pure white. They look pure white. We'll get to the hair, why they're not quite white. But they look white. They have the black nose, the tongue, the pad, and the eyes. The pads are black and the eyes are black. So I think most people know what a polar bear looks like. Coca-Cola, this, like, you know, especially this time of year, is always having the polar bears drinking Coke.
Yeah, in pop culture, they're everywhere.
Yeah. Again, Coke needs to pay us to promote their products.
I actually have Coke on my way.
Well, there you go. We actually use your product. Give us some money. No. So this was cool, too. Males bears are called boars.
Interesting.
And females are called sows.
So but like our pigs. The babies aren't called pigs. The babies are called cubs.
Yeah. So go figure.
Yeah.
Go figure.
See? Who learning already.
Yeah. See? Something new. Now, the males can stand almost 10 feet tall or 3 meters, which is huge.
Correct. Very tall.
And the females are about half the size, right? Mm-hmm. Roughly. So everything I'm giving you is like the largest ever seen or recorded. Not all of them are that big, but alpha males that do really well can get this big. Also can weigh up to 1,500 pounds or 700 kilograms.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smokes.
It's a big bear.
Yeah.
And I've had the pleasure of being able to be behind the scenes to polar bears that were under human care. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, lots of protected contact barriers between us, but they are very impressive.
Yeah, I would be
very impressive.
I know I said in the leopard episode, Leroy, his head, like just huge lion. Like, and I was pretty close to him. I didn't feel, because I know he was hand raised and he was a rescue, like they rescued him from a sideshow in Texas. I'll tell you what, the one animal that I was across, you know, protected contact with that scared me was the grizzly bear. This grizzly bear was just stare at you. I'm 2-3 feet away from her, and she's just drooling, looking at me.
Well, and I think you
she
bring
wanted
up
a, to eat me.
Well, you bring up a good point. In preparing for this podcast, I was chatting with my husband, who had the privilege of actually working intimately with polar bears in his professional career, and I just said, "Well, John, can you tell me some things? Like, what's your take on polar bears?" And the first word that came to his mind was smart.
Yeah.
And I'll get to more of that in the behavior. But then he also said too, he's like, they're very inquisitive and they're always looking at you. And he didn't say he felt, because obviously
nervous. Yeah.
Yeah,
he's protected.
Under human care, they're fed very well. Yeah. So they're not hungry or anything like that. But he just said that if anything, yeah, they were just always watching but they would check the locks and the doors and they're always they love their enrichment just word of the day, enrichment in a zoo setting means something that we give animals under human care to enrich their lives, but also to promote natural behaviors.
And stimulate.
To stimulate them, yeah. Stimulate so if there's, for the polar bears, we would like them to swim because they swim a lot in the wild. So we would toss a ball in the pool or a frozen fish popsicle or something in the pool time, to make them swim. But yeah, he also said they were a little bit of a challenge to enrich because they're so powerful. They would destroy everything.
Yeah, so quick.
Yeah, so quick. And also so intelligent, too. Mm-hmm. So it's got to be something, you know, to continually stimulate them. But yeah, so they definitely have to keep their eye on you.
Yeah, so that was the only animal at the zoo that I was like,
and I was, ooh. Yeah, I was always, I mean, their heads are decent size. Their skulls are big, and they have obviously big canines to help when they're hunting those seals in the ice. But I was always, I was most impressed by their feet and and their foot pads.
Yeah, they're huge.
That's what kind of blew me out of the water.
Yeah, so, anyways, getting back to the sizes, the females can stand up to 7 feet tall, so still pretty big.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, polar bears obviously live in the north, and there's actually 19, I didn't really know this either, there's 19 distinct populations, and their population's between 20 and 25,000, maybe upwards of 26.
It's hard to get a good count. I mean, they're those are 20 to 26,000 is the best estimates we have.
I mean, you think about how, first of all, how large that landmass is that they're on.
Sure.
And you're not able to just, oh, let's go do a census and out on the sea ice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The researchers that do study them, I give my hats off to them, hand claps, because that's some really harsh work that they do. And they're not made like polar bears, so
the last pod, we talked about reindeers, and then that audio of how windy it was. Remember how cold it was?
Yeah. Oh.
So it's like, it's that every day. Yes. That's probably a nice, brisk spring day up there.
Let alone that it's dark a lot of the time. So yeah, definitely harsh conditions.
Yeah, definitely harsh. They live, you know, and especially like the reindeer. We talked a lot about the reindeer.
Well, and everybody's familiar that they live in the Arctic Circle, but where specifically?
Right. So yeah, so if you look at specific countries, these 19 populations, North America, Canada, and the U.S., it's Alaska. And then Greenland, you know, which we always kind of forget about Greenland. It's way up there. And there's a lot going on up there. Some really cool muskox. There's another one that we need
yes!
to do.
Yeah. Muskox are very cool. I hope we cover them soon.
Right. And I reviewed a paper on muskox and diet. And so it was a looking at, they shaved the hair and then looked at the diets. We'll talk about it when we get there.
They do some really cool parenting and protective behavior in their herds.
Yeah. They're a really cool one. Yeah. So the Greenland and then Norway. So in Europe, they're in Norway, and then Russia. Okay, so those are the main countries that they're in.
And then unique thing about those different countries is they all have different ice populations too.
Right. Now, before I get into my favorite part, evolution, and all the different relatives, Angie, besides climate change, what are some of the things that really make us care about polar bears?
Sure. I think everybody loves polar bears in general just because they are this icon. But from a more kind of biodiversity point of view, polar bears are umbrella species, which we've touched on, I think, in previous podcasts. But an umbrella species just means that many organisms are connected to polar bears in the food web. For instance, they feed on seals, which you'll be talking about. And if there are no polar bears, the population of seals will skyrocket.
Yeah, you're gonna be crazy about how
We don't know the downfall of that. That means that maybe the fish that the seals eat will decrease. And then also the cute little Arctic fox, which we're all familiar with, that beautiful white creature, that they feed off the remains of the seals from the polar bears. Mm-hmm. So if there's no polar bears to catch them, the seals. So there's just a trickle down and up effect that we may not know much about.
Yeah, it's like whole dominoes. I mean, you again, this goes back to the theme of the show. You know, you start taking these major pieces out, they start falling apart. And it's going to turn around and bite us in the rear.
The polar bear is a major piece.
Yeah.
It's a big carnivore predator. Right. And so that's one reason. The other reason, Chris, you've touched on a little bit and we're going to talk about is the polar bear in general has just become this, what I like to call an ambassador species. Mm-hmm. They serve as sort of this icon or ambassador for what's happening in the Arctic now.
Right.
Species like the polar bear serve as a gauge to measure the effects of climate change. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously a unique thing about polar bears. But the last thing I want to touch on is this concept of ecotourism. Mm-hmm. But we always talk about ecotourism in generally. Today I want to focus on what we call, or a cool term I read in an opinion piece called eco-voyeurism. And what that means is just humans like to look at animals. We like nature parks, all of that. And one opinion piece I came across was written by a Georgetown University law professor named Lisa Heinzler Zingler. Sorry, Lisa.
You and my words.
It's Friday here. Yeah. I'm not doing well. But She addressed about the economic analysis of natural resources mm-hmm. and law policy and used a polar bear as a model. Mm. She brought up some really cool facts that live bear viewing, this includes brown bears as well as white bears or polar bears, was estimated at $485 million wow. to the economy. And this is in 1995.
Wow.
So that was like 20 years ago. So it's a lot higher now. And even me dreaming about someday going to see polar bears, an Arctic safari tour mm-hmm. can cost you up to $20,000.
Wow.
So we need to go with your buddy from Cincinnati. Yeah, like, we ain't going anytime soon.
We're going
to
come carry your equipment mm-hmm. for you.
And so I just think that for those of you that maybe, you know, aren't maybe as so much into animals and passionate just looking at them the way we are, for those that care a little bit more about economics and money, it's really important for a lot of these species that we save them, not only for just to look at them, but for the economy. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the different regions where the polar bear is still living, and when the tourists and the research mm-hmm. scientists go up there, they drop a lot of money on that local economy.
Right.
And so, Chris, if you'll bear with me or listeners, this is just a little excerpt from Lisa's article mm-hmm. about how much people really do to be around and or look at animals. Mm-hmm. So according to studies, the average household would be willing to pay $216 to protect bald eagles, $173 to protect humpback whales, and $67 for gray wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we added all this up across the U.S. population, this means $23 billion for bald eagles, $18 billion for humpbacks, and $7 billion for wolves. And so to put these numbers in perspective, she reports that the U.S. Department of Interior, who is supposed to protect threatened and endangered mm-hmm. species, and they also manage our public lands, they had a budget of less than $11 billion in 2006. So it just goes to show, from an economic point of view, how much money people are willing to spend. Now, are they? Or, you know, there's a lot of debate out there. Of course, this is just one opinion piece based on a lot of published studies.
Right.
But I think it goes to show that the polar bear, being such an iconic species, it potentially could be have really bad economic effects if they
went extinct.
Or
that tourism goes away.
And mm-hmm.
So looking at the bear family, Angie, getting back to general evolution, my favorite part, the Ursidae,
very good.
Is the bears.
Mm-hmm.
Polar bears at the top. And then you have brown bears that are in Asia and North America. So they have brown bears. Yeah, that Bering Sea Strait a long time ago. So they went back and forth. You have black bears in Asia and North America, again, going across that land bridge. The sun bears in Asia. The sloth bear in Asia. The speck bear in South America.
I believe that's the only one that lives south of the equator.
Right. It is. So it's really, really unique. And we'll get there where they split off. And then, you know, is their kind of favorite bear and the giant panda. Now, there is a lot of controversy about the giant panda. That is not a real bear. Blah, blah, blah. It's a bear. It looks like a bear. If it looks like a bear, it walks like a bear. It smells and sounds like a bear. They're really cuddly, though. Maybe not. I don't know. I think it's a bear. That's my opinion.
Well, yes. I'll be interested to see on the family tree where it falls because
they split so long ago.
So they are bears, but they're not bears, Chris. They're goofy. Their physiology's goofy. I shouldn't say they're goofy. Maybe they're goofy. I've never worked with them.
They are goofy. Watch videos of them.
Yeah, I've never worked with them personally. Yeah. I have friends that have worked with them, but their physiology's goofy. Panda bears are herbivores with a carnivore digestive tract.
Right.
And they only come into season like once a year.
Yeah,
for one day.
They're crazy.
They're goofy.
They're way goofy, but they're also goofy. Who doesn't love a panda bear? Like, everybody loves panda bears, but there's controversy and
people. Yeah, we'll do an episode of panda bears for sure.
In the next year, at some point, we'll do panda bears. Polar bears are very closely related to brown bears.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where all of this started. And like you said, the hybrids. So now they're seeing hybrids because, especially with polar bears, and we get to nutrition and stuff as far as they're spending more time on land than out on the ice. So they're coming across grizzlies and brown bears. And hey, when the music's playing, the season's right, they're mating.
Right. But it is still really rare.
Right. It is rare. But it is happening now. And that's because most bears have 74 chromosomes.
Okay. Across all the family trees?
Yeah. So
interesting.
Let me go back. How many does human have?
Well, I can do that really quick. Yeah. 23 plus 23 is 46.
No, 23 and me. Yeah, yeah, okay. 23 and me. Yeah, I'm going to approach them. Do you want to support our podcast? Because we talk a lot of genetics.
And so then horses is just flipped. Horses is 64.
32, right. 32%. Yeah. There you go. People are, see, you're learning.
I am.
See, something new today.
Not only am I learning, I'm actually memorizing, which is
74.
Fun.
Which is, you have tons of chromosomes for them. The speck bear, again, you're right, they're different. So they have 52, and then the panda bear has 42.
I told you they were goofy. They goofy physiology.
They are goofy. So actually, you know, looking at some of this evolution, and again, I was like, no, I'm getting back to the Cliff Notes version. I'm really holding myself back. Bears are really a young family compared to a lot of different mammals. They've only emerged about 20 million years ago, maybe 25. But Eurasia, North America is really where they came from. The earliest ancestor is like this bear dog type looking animal, and it was about the size of a raccoon. So it was tiny.
Smaller.
Yeah, tiny. And it was called Cephalogale.
Yes. Excellent. You got an A+ on that, Dr. Mortensen. Good job.
I did it. Now you're right. Pandas split about 20 million years ago, so they're totally different. Totally their own little lineage went off, but they're still considered a bear. The other modern species of bears, the blacks, the browns, all of the other ones actually split about 5 million years ago. Okay. So they all kind of differentiated. Now, getting back to polar bears didn't split off and start really evolving on their own until about 400,000 years ago.
Oh, that's not too long ago. From brown bears,
yeah. Yeah, in a geological time frame or in an evolutionary time frame, that's really right. Short.
I say it's not that long ago. From that point of view.
Yes. For us, obviously. Yeah.
For me, day to day, in and out, in grad school, as a mom, that's every day seems long.
Yeah. I mean, in humans, I think we were still Neanderthals back then. I don't even think Homo sapiens emerged then. So, yeah. But 400,000 years ago is not really that long ago compared to some of the other species. Now, I love doing this too, looking at some ancient relatives. And one was the cave bear. And so cave bears lived in Europe. And there's some debate when they went extinct about 24,000 years ago and what caused them, some pressures. But one of the papers I read was talking about how humans, when we started settling Europe, we lived in caves. And those were cave bears lived. So we pushed the bears out. And so the bears eventually went extinct. But they were pretty big.
I was going to say, I bet a few of those cave bears pushed some humans out.
I'm sure they did. God, can you imagine living back then? Oh, and the saber tooths. No thanks. Now, when I looked at the biggest bear ever. This one's about the size of an elephant, or as tall as an elephant.
What?
Yes. And this was the Augustine's bear.
Wow.
And it died out only about 11,000 years ago in South America.
Interesting.
Yeah. Of all places. Yeah. But it was the largest carnivore ever to live.
Double the size of a man.
Yeah. Weighed up to almost 2 tons or 3,500 pounds, 1,500 kilograms, stood 10 to 12 feet tall, three and a half meters tall, and just like could probably take down an elephant. Maybe not a bull elephant, but yeah, like huge. And so some of the studies reading about them was because of their large size, they had really difficulty surviving.
Finding that much food.
Yeah, like jaguars were out competing them, other smaller,
quicker, faster.
Yeah, that big size really did a disservice to them. So anyways, but yeah, can you imagine? And about 11,000 years ago, I think it's when humans started colonizing South America. Or not colonizing, I shouldn't say. But, you know, it was the earliest South American Indians were coming down. So maybe they had something to do with it too. Some of the other ones.
The polar bear has had a long history with humans. Mm-hmm. Bears in general. But, of course, they are focusing on the polar bears. And especially they've provided a lot of important raw materials for the Arctic people, including the Inuit and many others, as you mentioned earlier. And besides their historical use with the native Arctic peoples, I mean, more recently, like we've touched on, they're a popular icon.
Right.
They're symbols, they're mascots. In fact, polar bears on the Canadian $2 coin.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in fiction books. Mm-hmm. They are in Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
In fact, they're such an adored species that they're this February 27th of each year is International Polar Bear Day.
Right, right.
And this helps raise awareness about their conservation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great, long, traditional history of a love for the polar bear.
Right, right. I think, yeah, like if you look at, panda has become iconic, but also I think polar bears are the other one that people are just like, oh, they love them. They just love them.
And it's wonderful because then I think it opens up people, if you love the polar bear, then you might want to learn more about the Arctic fox, or right. then you want to learn more about the spectacle bear in Asia.
Right.
And so they're really, I think, they're helpful.
Ambassadors.
Mm-hmm, yeah. They're really ambassadors.
Yeah, to the species. Now, living in the wild is, it's again, tough. And they just, hard lives living out on the ice. They live to be 15 to 18 years, which is about right for a predator.
Under human care, they've lived up to 43 years at a zoo in Winnipeg.
Yeah, yeah. So they live.
Which goes to show that if they're 15 to 20 in the wild, their lifespan, they have a hard life.
Oh, it's very hard. It's very hard. And they spend half their lives or half the year out on the ice.
Yes, sleeping, feeding, breeding, all of it.
Yeah, and I mean, reading some of these papers, they almost consider them an aquatic mammal.
They're a marine mammal. They in the U.S. they're under the U.S. Marine Mammal Protection Act. Exactly,
right, because they spend so much time on the ice or in the water.
And they swim a lot.
Right, they do swim a lot. Now you were mentioning the when it's dark. So 3 months out of the year, it's cold, dark winters. And then the summers, there's almost no night, no darkness for 3 months. It's almost always light. And the reason the polar regions, so some of the science behind why it's so cold up there is the way the earth tilts and stuff. And then the atmosphere is just so much thicker.
Mm-hmm.
So the light can't penetrate as far. The energy from the sun provides us energy, warms the earth. So through that thick, thick atmosphere, as it comes through, less of it gets to the ground. And then the white ocean like bounces it right back up.
Yeah, it can't really penetrate.
So it gets colder.
Bounces right back.
Now, climate change, just a little bit about climate change, is having such a dramatic effect on the polar regions. So there's this thing called the albedo effect. And basically, that idea of bouncing the light up back, right? Well, as that melts, you have this dark ocean, which absorbs heat.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing a more dramatic increase there than, say, the jungles of Brazil, at the equatorial plain. So it's just as that ocean absorbs more heat, more light, stuff like that, it warms up quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing that effect. Also, the reason the polar regions are such, a lot of scientists are really worried about it, is the methane. And I know we've talked a little bit, with the mammoth and things and the tundra.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding, mammoth carcasses in the tundra. But the big thing is the methane that's trapped in there. So as the tundra melts, that ice melts, it's releasing more methane, which is going up into the atmosphere. So that's why the Earth's getting warmer.
Which is a normal process, except for when it's sped up.
Yeah, and it's dramatic.
It's
a huge dump of methane. Mm-hmm. It's not little bits here and there. It's a massive dump of methane. So one of the cool things about polar bears, it's still cold up
Chris,
there.
Chris, there's a lot of cool things.
I know. But
one of the many cool things about polar bears.
One of the things I read about the Arctic, and I really thought about it for a while, it made me pause, was just how quiet it is up there.
Sure, there's no noise pollution.
Yeah, no insects, very few amphibians, very few birds. It's just...
No ambulances.
No
quiet. Toddlers running around screaming, mama.
So can you imagine just...
No, Chris, I can't imagine quiet.
Yeah. So that was kind of a cool fact.
I read the same thing. I put myself there for like the 30 seconds before I heard mama. Yeah. And that would be very, I don't know if I've ever been anywhere like that.
Yeah, it would be really cool.
It'd be beautiful, mysterious for sure.
Yeah, it would be. And then the polar bear sneaks up behind you because they are very sneaky. So a lot of crazy adaptations to survive the cold. One's major, one's diet, which we're going to get to. And that just helps them with their body mass. Actually, we talked about the bear in South America that was super huge and the size didn't help them. The inverse is true with the polar bear. Their size actually does help them, helps them thermoregulate better. So they want to be bulkier up in that area of the world. They have smaller ears and tails.
Yeah, Chris, just to interject really quick, their smaller ears and tail follow the physiological rule called the Allen's rule.
That's cool.
And what that does is just predicts animals that live farther north have smaller appendages in order to conserve heat.
Right. Yeah.
And so the polar bear is a prime example of that as they've evolved in that region, their ears have shrunk down to be very small and their tail.
Right. That's crazy. Yeah. You wouldn't even think about stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But now physiologically, it makes
sense. Now when that question comes up in Jeopardy.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Allen's rule, everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. So thick layers of fat. up to 4 inches or 10 centimeters just in the rump.
I love everything about that.
Yeah, they're fat, portly polar bears. And so, yeah, their body can be almost 50% pure fat.
That's incredible.
Just this portly polar bear.
Like, my doctor would not approve of that.
Yeah, I said the portly porpoise. No, yeah. It's the portly polar bear. This I love thing, it.
They need the fat, though.
They do. Mm-hmm. They do. It's very critical to their survival, energy, and then buoyancy while they swim.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's almost like
But one little downfall is they can overheat in the summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that too much is something. Fat is and not that's a good mm-hmm. thing. Yeah. And they will. They're known for their kind of ambling gates, walk, yeah. their gait, yeah. And but they can run fast up to they've been clocked up to 22 miles per hour.
Yeah.
But it's really rare that they do that because even in the coldest weather, running that fast, they'll overheat.
Right. Right.
So they like to just kind of amble and do their nice little walk.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then, you know, so we'll talk about the hair real quick. So two layers.
Mm-hmm.
So the outer layer is this greasy hair. It helps repel water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like water-repellent guard hairs.
Right, and then they have the inner layer that's woolly for warmth. Now, you were saying they're not quite white?
Sure, Chris. Surprisingly, the fur isn't actually white.
Yeah.
It just looks that way. Each hair shaft is pigment-free and transparent with a hollow core which scatters light.
That's crazy.
I should say it scatters and reflects
light,
visible light, much like what happens in the ice and the snow. And so depending on what their backdrop is, they can not be as white. They might be more of a light orange color-ish.
Yellowish, like
when the sun's setting or whatnot.
So you're telling me polar bears aren't truly white?
Polar bears are not truly white, but their hair is, I would say, almost like quite luxuriant.
Yeah, it's really pretty cool. Now, they have these huge, huge paws.
That's what I'm in love with.
Yeah.
Like, I love baby feet. I like feet in general. Yeah. Maybe I'm probably exposing too much of myself on this podcast. Right. We can add that to another weird things about Angie. But no, especially baby feet. Right. Come on. But yeah, the polar bear feet are impressive. Huge. And that's the first thing I noticed when I was able to be in close proximity to them.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a lot of purposes. They're not just to be cute or whatever.
Right.
They can serve as a paddle.
They do, yeah, while they swim. And then the pads have like all these small papillae, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah,
and that helps them grip on the ice, which makes sense, right?
Like, humans wear those shoes with spikes in it to grip, and they just...
Oh, yeah. I mean, cleats and stuff.
Mm-hmm. They basically evolve teeny tiny cleat feet.
Yeah, on their feet, and that just helps them grip. And then also it just acts like they're so big, they're like snowshoes.
Yes, well, and they distribute the weight
yeah.
on the ice. Mm-hmm. And so that's very important, right, when they're starting to walk on areas of thinner ice and whatnot.
Yeah, they are, again, crazy adaptations to their environment. They have way better night vision than we do.
Mm-hmm.
They have really good vision, you know, binocular vision like we do, but their night vision's superior, and that makes sense.
Right.
You know, dark times of the year. Now, this was cool, too, and I never really thought about it. You know, again, polar bears and bears, these guys don't hibernate.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nope, they do not.
During the winter, when all the other bears are sleeping,
mm-hmm.
storing energy,
mm-hmm.
these guys are out on the ice.
They're hunting, man. Yeah. It's their go time.
Yeah, this is their most active time of year is during the winter, and this is when they're like that aquatic marine mammal. Now, during the winter months, like we said, they're out there hunting all the time. They can travel up to 4,000 miles a year or 6,500 kilometers in the winter.
Right. Scientists have been learning a lot more about them in the past, I would say, 20 to 40 years with new technology such as radio collaring them and whatnot. Their goal is to start using drones, too, because some of these areas that the polar bears are traveling in are just inhospitable to researchers.
Right.
But yeah, they have been documented up to 4,000 miles.
So Angie, that's like walking from here to California and back
in
the winter. So get going. Yeah, get going. Like, holy smokes.
Yeah,
that
I would make
crazy.
It like one day and just give up.
That's nuts.
No, they have a lot of adaptations.
Yeah, and you said they're pretty fast. So they travel about, like you said, with that ambling gait, about 3.5 miles per hour.
Right. In general, you as a human can beat them.
Yeah.
But if you meant
that's like my nightmare is being trapped on the ice with a polar bear because there's nowhere to hide.
Well, the joke my husband always says is he's like, you don't have to be faster. You just you have to be faster than the slowest guy behind you.
Exactly. Sorry,
I'm like,
Angie.
Thanks, honey, because that'd probably be me. I know. I think I'm actually faster now. But yeah, I couldn't leave him behind because I need him. I would just go down with him.
I can't wait to talk to Aaron about some of this stuff. Now, during the summer, so this is what I thought was really cool too, learning about them. They sleep about for a third, 35, up to 35% of the summer. They're just sleeping. So it's not, they're not hibernating, but they're just fasting and at rest, conserving energy. They're not out hunting much. They're just chilling and waiting for the winter to come back. Mm-hmm. And so they're living off their fat reserves.
Yeah. And there was some statistic I learned that you may be able to compliment me on. But they can fast for a very long time.
Yes, yeah,
like very long. Months.
Yeah, and they don't. Yeah, they
with
don't
no eat. Food or water.
Mm. Now, one of my favorite things about polar bear, one of the most favorite, I think it was Planet Earth or one of those documentaries the BBC put out, is that one where that polar bear like works out and sneaks up on the seal. Now the seal gets away in the video, but the video of the bear like. Sneaking around and like poking its head up on the ice and then kind of slithers onto the ice. And the last minute, the seal catches wind of it and jumps into the water. But these guys are intelligent, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that once again, that was the first word my husband said when I asked him to, you know, just quickly give me some cliff notes on polar bears. And very observant. And researchers, now that they are beginning to study them a little bit more, that we have technology to do that, they're learning how intelligent they are. There's multiple accounts of bears figuring out how to get food from many different areas and climbing and digging and searching for these food objects. And they're really resourceful at gaining entry into probably places they shouldn't be.
Right.
And we also believe that if there, as more studies come in of them in the wild, we're going to keep learning just how intelligent they are.
Right. Yeah. Pretty complex tasks.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. And then let alone like traveling 4,000 miles and like knowing where to go and having the ability to navigate and to
especially
do that.
On the ice.
Yeah,
right?
on the ice.
Yeah. I mean, they must navigate by stars or something. I don't know. It's cool.
And with their intelligence, of course, comes their social behavior and communication. Now, typically, polar bears spend most of their lives alone. So they're not social.
Solitary.
They're more solitary. Unless it's a mother and a cub, and then, of course, during breeding season. But even as, quote-unquote, solitary animals, they have a lot of different ways to communicate with each other when they come across each other or as a mother and cub would. And they use a lot of different body languages. Yeah. And one of the more notorious behaviors that's often shown in different videos or whatnot with researchers, and it's personally my favorite, is with young male cubs, we'll do a sort of ritualized wrestling match.
Right.
And these are young sub-adults that are just basically like practicing. So nobody gets hurt. Right. It's like a mock combat.
Right.
In fact, my 4-year-old and 15-month-old pretty much.
Yeah, that's what our kids do too.
Do the same thing.
Yeah.
But this is so unique too because they'll stand up on their hind legs and kind of just push each other to see how strong they are and mock bite each other. But from a distance, it can almost look like they're dancing.
Right.
Because they're just kind of going back and forth. And so that's one of the more notorious behaviors. But they do many different greetings, nose-to-nose greetings. They'll charge, of course. And when they're excited to see one another and they want to play, they kind of do this head wagging side to side. And their vocal communications, and then of course they scent mark as a way to communicate with each other. And their vocalizations range from many different sounds to chuffing or scolding. That's what I do to my boys a little bit. Yeah. With a growl or a little chuff sound. The rushing, hissing, snorting. And of course, they're known for their loud roars and growls or deep growls. And the cubs, of course, too, communicate a lot. So if you'll bear with me, I'll play a little clip of a cub that is looking for its mom.
I just wouldn't think bears would make such a honking sound.
Yeah. I'm in such mom mode. It kind of actually sounds like my 15-month-old right now.
I'm hungry.
Yeah, just where are you, mom, right
juice.
Now? And then additionally, polar bears actually like to be clean. They spend a lot of time cleaning their matted, dirty fur. Because when it's matted, it's a poor insulator.
Right, right.
And I love this fact. They sleep usually 7 or 8 hours a day with naps. Sounds like my dream life
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, they're known for digging ice caves and then mm-hmm. sleeping in the snow.
Right.
And when
yeah, I even read some of the things like during big snowstorms, they'll dig mm-hmm. and, you know, stay downwind or whatever, build up.
Oh, yeah, for a couple days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when they're sitting there, you know, in those ice caves, you know, waiting out the storms, then they get out and start hunting.
Right.
Which is a good segue mm-hmm. to nutrition. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of their behaviors are focused in on their nutrition
right.
and how yeah. they hunt and how successful right. they are.
So this is a carnivorous bear. You know, most other bears are
strictly
omnivores, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Strictly carnivorous.
So they are carnivorous.
And Chris, that's one of the reasons why researchers kind of defend the argument that, oh, well, the polar bears can just move south and yeah, be fine if the ice melts. They can't.
No. And that's
they've not adapted to being omnivores.
Right. And that's where, you know, we'll get to with the climate change effects, because it is not good for them as far as their diet, because they prefer, actually, their number one preference is called a ring seal.
Mm-hmm.
But they do eat walruses or whales that wash up, and really what they're looking for, and I know, going back, who doesn't love fat or a donut? These guys, this is what they love. They love the blubber, just pure fat diets.
Well, and it makes sense that their body knows what they need. If they're going to have this long time fasting,
mm-hmm.
what do you live off of? You live off your blubber.
Yeah. And so, I mean, obviously they do eat the meat and the protein, because we all need that. But they love the fat. And that's where these guys are so crazy, because so they have these lipid-rich diets. And so what researchers have been discovering with them is so in cholesterol, there's two types of cholesterols. There's LDLs, there's HDLs. The LDLs are the low-density lipoproteins, and those are the bad cholesterol.
Right, Chris. When I was studying for one of my nutrition exams years ago, this always threw me off. I was mm-hmm. like, low-density should be good,
right.
lower cholesterol, where high-density should be bad. I just had to say, nope, you're always wrong, Angie. Flip that.
Right.
So low-density lipoproteins are bad.
They're the ones that clog arteries.
Mm-hmm. That's the number you're trying
stuff.
To get down.
Right.
Where high-density lipoproteins, HLDs, are good ones and actually help remove some of the fat.
Right. And so the LDLs, you know, in our diets mm-hmm. are not good for us. These polar bears, they live off this stuff. They love it. And so researchers are looking at their genes, going back to genetics, and saying, how do they survive?
Right.
How does their cardiovascular system survive these LDLs, which in most other species would blow their hearts up?
Right. Maybe
polar bears are like, hey, this is great.
And that's the thing. There's so much to learn about animals that we've just starting to now have the technology, especially molecular genetics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who knows what we can learn from
right,
them? Who knows
right.
what we can mimic from them?
Just another species that we're learning that has application to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to get to some of the climate change, why polar bears are under threat, it has a lot to do with nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, they live off these ring seals during the winter. And they estimate of the roughly 20,000 plus polar bears in the world, they need about 1 million seals annually.
Interesting.
That's crazy.
That's a lot of seals.
That's
yeah.
a lot of seals. And the instances where they are catching polar bears because the sea ice is melting earlier, that they actually are this omnivore diet, eating things like bird eggs and maybe some plants, they can't survive. Simple calculation, calories in, calories out.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I teach nutrition, an animal nutrition, is you have to exceed barely, not much, unless you're, you know, feeding cows or pigs or something. So let's just say for like horses or in a zoo setting, you know, a lot of these animals in a zoo setting, you want to try to maintain their body weight.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, you know, maybe a little bit more calories than they're used to, but not enough that they're going to put on tons of weight. So polar bears, depending on these omnivore diets, just can't survive.
Right. You can't go from eating all donuts to blueberries.
No.
As much as I'm a blueberry promoter.
Yeah.
And everybody should eat more blueberries.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's just not, that's not how they evolved.
Right. So it's just a simple calories in, calories out. So as the poles are warming, the winter ice is breaking up earlier and earlier. They estimate by 2020 we'll be able to sail right over the North Pole. First
wow.
time in human history that's ever happened. And then I even saw further estimates within 5 years after that. For 3 months out of the year, the poles should be ice free, or the North Pole should be ice free. Now, that means polar bears are coming to land earlier in the year. They have to fast longer. Mm-hmm. Right, than what they've evolved to over the last 400,000 years. So now we're seeing polar bears starving. Just across my feed this morning, news feed, talking about finding a starving polar bear.
I know, I can't look at those pictures. They make me so sad.
Yeah, and the moms can't survive with the cubs.
I know.
Yeah, so they can't, you know, lactate, things like that. Now this...
They're swimming longer distances, yeah, which they're not... They're amazing swimmers, but without the fat reserves, swimming longer distances. I mean, I was a swimmer in high school, and I mean, some of the distances these polar bears swim in general are...
60 miles or 100 kilometers.
And then we're just pushing them to swim more on less reserves.
Yeah, they have less energy and stuff. So then like you and I always talk about the trickle-down, trickle-up effect. So here's a trickle-down effect, and this paper was in Ecology and Evolution, titled Climate Change and the Increasing Impact of Polar Bears on Bird Populations. So as these bears come to land earlier, they're coming to land when a lot of these birds are nesting. So they're preying on the birds. They're killing the birds in the nests. They're eating the eggs or the baby birds.
Thank you for bringing that up. I hadn't even
thought about that. The ecological impact. So three bird species, the barnacle goose, common eider, and the glacius gull are the ones that are really affected by this. And in some areas, 90% of the birds have been wiped out or their nests are preyed upon. And again, the sad thing about this is it's not sustaining the polar bear, right?
Right. It's
not normal for them. It's not, they don't, even though they're eating these birds and kind of decimating these bird populations, it's not enough to sustain them.
Right.
So, you know, that's not the good news or the good stuff. We're not doing doom and gloom, but that is some of the science on why when we say climate change and polar bears, it basically has to do with diet, that they are not getting enough food. Looking at the climate change effects, so now we can go and look at repro, like what's their generation interval?
Well, Chris, one of the issues with their life cycle is they have a little bit longer, they have a longer life cycle, so that they're not able to produce cubs every year. In fact, males mature at 6 years of age, but they don't really stop growing until 8 to 10, and that's probably when they can actually become more competitive for a female.
Breeding.
For breeding. And the same thing for females, mature when they're about 6.
And then they all live to be about 15 to 18, right?
Right. Females, when they are around 5 to 6 years old and start breeding, they produce 1 to 2, rarely 3 cubs. Every 3 years. So it's a slow life cycle.
Yeah, so then she's only producing maybe 3 or 4 litters max, maybe?
Correct. Yeah. And historically, it's been about 2 cubs is the average. But with the nutritional status of the polar bears going down, researchers have seen an increase of only 1 cub being produced.
Yeah.
So that's going to be some hard with their generation intervals.
Yeah, and that's some of the reproductive dorks in us that... You know, nutrition does play such a big role.
Oh, it's huge. Oh, yes. Their bodies are really, really smart to understand their nutritional status and how that will influence their reproduction. And I'll get to that cool, cool physiological fact in a second. But just briefly, mating is going to take place out on the ice. Very romantic.
Yeah, in the night.
Cold.
Yeah.
In April or May. And males are going to compete intensely for the females and may even breed a couple females. And so there's I don't know the statistics on it, but a female can have cubs with different fathers.
Yeah, right.
Multiple males can breed one female, and therefore sometimes cubs will have different fathers.
Right.
And getting back to the females, their total gestation period is 8 months.
It's pretty long.
And so, but interestingly enough, one of the coolest, and I'm going to dork out for just bear with me for one second. One of the coolest reproductive adaptations these guys have is that they experience something called delayed implantation.
Which is really nuts.
Or it's also called embryonic diapause. And what that means is that they breed on the ice, under the moon and stars and maybe aurora borealis.
Oh, God, yeah. No wonder why they're mating.
And then the egg and sperm meet and fertilization occurs. That's normal. That happens in all the mammals. But what happens with delayed implantation is the egg is fertilized, but it doesn't attach or implant into the uterine wall or the uterus until August or September. So this fertilized egg divides into what we call a blastocyst, which just means a small amount of cells.
Right.
And then something, we don't know what, researchers don't know what, signals it to stop growing, and it just keeps floating around the uterus for about 4 months.
That's insane. That's
safely. Insane. Yeah. And pause. And then once again, around August or September, I suppose the body understands what her nutritional status is. Mm-hmm. And then the embryo will either be reabsorbed if her nutritional status isn't right. good or conditions don't seem fair. August and September, if she's fat and healthy and had a lot of ring seals, that embryo will go ahead and implant in the uterine wall and proceed as normal.
There's got to be some signaling mechanism, mm-hmm. which would be really awesome to study.
Yeah, and so basically they think the embryo is really only, the growth period is actually only 4 months.
Wow. Okay.
Because when a cub is born, it's born in December or January, mm-hmm. and it's going to be about 1 pound.
That's so
How many
small.
Kilos?
2.2.
Very good, very good. So small. And then they stay with the mom in the den for the while until they grow bigger and stronger mm-hmm. before they emerge from the den. And a cub is going to be with the mom for about 2 to 2.5 years
right.
growing
That's
up.
That's a long time.
It's a long investment. But once again, as a specialized carnivore, these cubs need to learn how to hunt these
right.
seals. And it takes a while before they get kicked out of the nest.
So I have to break in. Okay. You could argue with me that a polar bear cub is probably the cutest baby on earth. I go with cheetahs just because that hair is very unique. But there is nothing cuter than that white, which is not true white. It's reflective light off the hairs now that we know that. But my God, they are the cutest things.
I was going to say, I can challenge you. I know what is cuter than that. Two of them together playing.
Okay, there you go. Don't worry, you're such a geek.
You didn't see that one.
I didn't know. No, I was going to be like, oh, what are you going to say?
He was right. He had his like fists up. He was right. No,
Like the cutest.
Rolling around the snow, belly sliding.
Them and cheetahs, they're up there for cutest animals in the world. Yeah, they're just, oh my God, they melt your heart. So conservation status, the population is in decline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's vulnerable according to the IUCN, International Union for Conservation mm-hmm. of Nature. These population counts are difficult to know precisely. So these are estimates, and they are actually unsure if the population is declining just because it's either staying somewhat stable,
right.
but most likely declining. It's just hard.
Which is good news. I mean, people listening to this might think, oh my God, polar bear populations are cut in half. They're not.
No, they're not declining at some of the other ones as rapidly as a lot of the other ones we have
right.
focused on.
So there's not, you know, it's not all doom and gloom for them.
No.
It's just not looking good. Like we're just looking into the future and seeing some problems.
Yes. I mean, they depend on the Arctic ice for access to their prey. If that's gone, that's going to be a problem for these mm-hmm. guys.
And I'll just say to the listeners too that the IUCN Red List, we link it in our show notes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to read more about this, you can go in there and just click on polar bears and mm-hmm. it will pull you up.
But once again, the good news is that there's a lot of people
looking out for them.
Government officials, mm-hmm. Mom and pops just at home on the couch, like,
right.
you know, and like me, you know, wanting to help these guys.
Polar bears.
And then of course, research scientists
right.
and zoos.
Now, one way the listeners can help and one way that, you know, we should all try to be more green is be more energy efficient.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
conservation tip of the week is do your best. It's not easy, and we're learning as a society, but at least way more than, say, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But leading a carbon neutral life, and I think a good place to start that everybody listening can do is make sure you have energy efficient light bulbs. Next time you buy a light bulb, I know they're a little bit more expensive, but get energy efficient light bulbs, and that's just one step.
Well, they might be more expensive, but they last a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
I have ones that have been for years. We haven't changed them out.
Yeah, and we all need. I think if the more people do that, the harder we work towards being carbon neutral mm-hmm. in the decisions we make, you know, better for the earth.
And for all the kids listening out there too, I think the other thing that they can do, or parents can encourage to do for kids, super easy. Chris and I touched on it earlier in this podcast. Is get off those darn devices or computers or iPads or whatnot, video games, and go spend some time outside.
Yeah, go outside.
A, it's healthy, the exercise you get when you're outside and being around nature. You might become a nature lover like me. And then B, closing down those devices
is less energy,
right? They take power. So that's kind of anybody can do that.
Yeah.
You don't need to go buy anything or do anything.
Right.
So that's a fun one.
Yeah, and at night, I walk around my house, turn off lights that the kids leave on or, you know, my wife accidentally leaves on and I'm like, okay, you know, I got to lead a carbon neutral life. And, you know, and then eventually we'll all be driving hybrid vehicles or, you know, flex fuel vehicles or fuel efficient vehicles is kind of the goal that, we should all get there. But I think starting with light bulbs and shutting lights off at night.
Chris, tell me a little bit about your organization of the week to support.
I know, I'm picking one this week. Because of Aaron. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've followed Aaron's career as a really good friend. And she, you know, works at the Cincinnati Zoo now. And she has the Polar Bear Challenge. Mm. So people can go and look and go to the Cincinnati Zoo website. I know they have tons of followers on Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah, they have a large presence.
Yes. But mm-hmm. if you go to the CincinnatiZoo.org website, look for the Polar Bear Challenge. I'll have the link in the show notes on our website, allcreaturespod.com. And they are trying to raise $70,000 by the end of the year.
Okay, cool.
So we're running out of time, but, you know, they do this every year. But it helps support the research that they're doing to go. And like I said, Aaron, it was like 3 weeks ago, she was up in Manitoba, you know, going around studying these bears. And she'll tell us more about that.
Yeah, Cincinnati Zoo is definitely a leader in the zoological society as far as their conservation and research and the way they're able to learn about animals mm-hmm. and then helping to relate that back to the wild right. and or studying more about animals living in the wild right. and how to better care for animals living under human care.
Yeah,
and
they're
just a lot of fun. And
yeah, they're one of the best.
And just to plug Cincinnati a little bit, if any of the listeners out there have been living under a cave and haven't heard of Fiona the hippo.
Oh, yeah. God.
You need to follow her because in a lot of this doom and gloom political climate stuff, the negativeness of 2017, Fiona has been my hero. Yeah, in fact, she was a premature hippo mm-hmm. that was born, and the Cincinnati Zoo obviously embraced this challenge. Mm-hmm. And the keeper staff and the animal care staff there went above and beyond to help this little hippo survive.
Yeah. Videos are just...
But that's beyond. Along the way, they basically made like a video documentary and or were sharing each step of the way, each pound she gained, all the successes. And it just warmed my heart every few days.
And then another cute baby animal. Okay, Fiona's in the top five. Like, she's up there.
She is so up there.
Oh, my God. Baby hippos. I mean, hippos scare. Yeah, I can't wait till we do hippos, but they...
Wait till you hear my hippo call. Okay. That is my best one.
Okay.
That is my best
one. We were going to do hippo soon then mm-hmm. because there's the challenge.
But yeah, Cincinnati Zoo Polar Bear Challenge. Check it out.
Yeah,
check
please.
Them out.
And then the other organization that
you and so my organization, the organization I want to highlight this week, I picked because polar bear research is so incredibly difficult mm-hmm. to do because of these harsh conditions and how inaccessible they are for us humans. But one group that does not knock it out of the park job, in my opinion, is Polar Bear International. Mm-hmm. They can be found at www.polarbearsinternational.org. And of course, they have a presence on Facebook and Twitter and mm-hmm. whatnot. And basically, Chris, they are just about polar bears entirely. Mm-hmm. They do everything from research on the polar bears, but also on climate change. Mm-hmm. They use bear trackers online to monitor the bears overseas. They have bear adoptions. They support solutions through education and mm-hmm. advocacy and action. But Polar Bear International, check them out. They are doing some really cool things. I was up late last night watching a video, learning more about polar bears from the researchers up there that were doing it. And I got to see the polar bear skull and some polar bears on the cameras there. So yeah, check them out. They're doing really cool work.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna go check out that website. You know, and so again, reflecting on the past hour, I guarantee you learned something new. Mm-hmm. If not, please let me know.
Yeah, tweet us your favorite fact you learned.
Yeah, unless you are a polar bear researcher, you're like,
sure,
oh,
not yeah, not the guys from Polar Bears International. Yeah, they're probably gonna correct me on something that I didn't say exactly right. But
anyways, we're always right. No, thank you for listening. Just if you can subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter. Be sure to download Thursday's episode, which will be Dr. Aaron Curry from the Cincinnati Zoo.
Thank you, Dr. Curry.
Yes, it'll be our very first interview with the researcher, and we have some more lined up, but she's going to be phenomenal.
Well, thank you so much for listening. Hope you had fun today. I know I did.
Yeah, thank you.
Listen, learn, share. Join the movement at allcreaturespod.com.